big connection between those values. And you start to see that people that have unregulated or higher amounts of values of the blood sugar tend to have lower heart rate variabilities. You should look at the research, it's all the way through the process of that. So how can we, another value, so how can we use heart rate variability in regards to diabetics? That there's a big connection again around stress management. We know people that are under stress can have a significant increases of their blood sugar values and make it a significant amount of difficult to control.
Welcome to Thriving with Diabetes, the podcast where we empower people with type 2 diabetes. I am your host, Gamden, a holistic wellness coach, helping people overcome challenges related to diabetes. As a holistic wellness coach, I have dedicated my passion for health and wellness to helping people like you navigate the complexities of diabetes. I believe that with the correct knowledge, support, and mindset, you can manage your health condition more effectively and lead a fulfilling and vital life. In this episode of Thriving with Diabetes podcast, we are talking about heart rate variability and its vital role in managing diabetes and overall health. Joining us today, Greg Elliott, an osteopath, exercise psychologist, and a heart rate variability thought leader. Greg is on a mission to empower people to take control of their health through education, motivation, and actionable insights. I'm excited to have our special guest with me today, Greg Elliott. As you know that our podcast is all about empowering people with type 2 diabetes to lead healthier and more fulfilling lives. Having experts like Greg on our show helps us achieve that goal. Before we dive into our discussion, I would love Greg to introduce himself, share some background about him and what he does. So without further ado, I will hand it over to Greg. Greg, welcome to Thriving with Diabetes podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. It's a very specialized topic with regards to diabetes and heart rate variability. So I'm excited to dive in about, what research is showing and the connection between the two and how to best use this biomarker to kind of help not only, control over people's health and well-being, but to make, long-standing changes to live a long, healthy life. Yeah, so my background, exercise was a big part of what I did. I was a student athlete, played basketball in the United States. Down there, got my master's degree from Bloomsburg University before coming back home to Vancouver, Canada. As I was in practice a little bit more, I wanted to be able to expand my skill set, which led me down to osteopathy to kind of help people. And that's so primarily as a practitioner, I'm an osteopath in the clinic, helping people with all sorts of conditions, including diabetes. So how I got started in this route, my master's thesis was around non-invasive ways of measuring heart function in kind of specialized populations, primarily during exercise, and seeing what those pieces of equipment would do. And this is where I got introduced to heart rate variability. At the time, it wasn't a biomarker for exercise, but it was a good way of looking kind of overall heart function when it comes to prognosis of various conditions, specifically with the heart. During rest, so it was not in my thesis, but I researched it quite a bit. When I came back home, I started to hear that a lot of people were utilizing this for more of a training perspective, more training management. Saying, hey, is today a good day to train or not? So I was very curious as to the mechanisms. And when I started to research it a lot more, I started to realize that it was rooted in health. It wasn't necessarily rooted in performance, a lot of the research. And I was like, well, what's the connection between the two? And the connection between that is stress management, understanding the stress regulation. That's kind of the big connection between it all. And there's a big connection between people suffering from type 2 diabetes and stress as well. And so this is where I see the natural fit for people that are inflicted with type 2 diabetes, how to be able to take some agency and ownership of their, their health and well-being with a great non-invasive biometric.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing this unique background. And it's very interesting to learn about heart rate variability. So let's give our audience and an overview of what heart rate variability and its applications so they have a foundational understanding of heart rate variability. Could you provide a simple explanation of what heart rate variability is and why it is important for performance and health?
Yes, yeah, so the typical way I describe it is most people understand heart rate, 60 beats per minute, 90 beats per minute. They're very familiar with that. But what we find to be significantly more important in regards to health and well-being is actually the frequency of which those beats occur. So me and my patient can have similar resting heart rate at 60 beats per minute, where mine beats like a metronome. It's super consistent on the second, every second. But my patient can have a variable heart rate where at rest it speeds up and it slows down in a nice rhythmic pattern. What we know now is that my patient is actually in a healthier, happier state than I am, which seems very counterintuitive, especially with people with diabetes. Can I go, well, I don't want blood sugars to spike and then crash and then spike and then crash. That's not what we want. We want to be able to maintain, that's where our body feels somewhat normal, is in this kind of this steady state. So a lot of it goes against a lot of our understanding of physiology. But this is, the opposite when it comes to variability. The healthier we are, the more variable our heart rate is. And again, it comes back to this aspect of stress management. When our body is stressed, our heart rate increases and our heart rate variability decreases and vice versa. And the reason why we like to use heart rate variability instead of heart rate is that it is significantly more sensitive to our daily behaviors and daily stressors, where heart rate looks at more kind of chronic stressors of those of our health and well-being. So that's where, things like going through a stressful day at work or meeting with friends or alcohol or any of these things that we have that can impact our body's overall health and stress management capabilities is significantly more reflective of our heart rate variability than our heart rate. So that's a big differentiating factor between the two, and its value more than just the other metric.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. It's very interesting. I think understanding the benefits of improving heart rate variability can motivate people to explore its potential health benefits. So if you can talk about some health benefits associated with optimizing heart rate variability as well.
Absolutely. So I always like to kind of preface to the point when we talk about health, because I talk to a lot of people and everyone's got definitions of what health is, right? Because everyone has a different idea of what being healthy means. Some people say I wake up with energy. Other people is that I love my day and I have purpose in life. And other people say I feel physically strong. And so the idea of health as a general concept is very individualized for that. But as a general concept, the idea of health is a state of physical, mental, and social well-being. So that's kind of what it is. It's holistic nature of health. We have to look at each of those areas. And then it comes down to the point of, okay, well, what's physical well-being? What does that mean? So physical well-being is our ability to deal with the normal stressors of life through physical nature, our physical stressors of life. Emotional well-being is the ability to cope and manage the emotional stressors of life, and same with social. So it comes down to our ability to manage and deal and cope with stress seems to be what makes us healthy, truly from what we call the biopsychosocial aspect, the biopsychosocial model. So the health benefits through heart rate variability, it captures all of these as equals, meaning the fact that biological inputs or biological health, you know, things that we can't control like our sleep, nutrition, and exercise, are just as meaningful to our heart rate variability as our emotional regulation, our self-acceptance, our purpose in life. And it's just as equal to have a good support network and good relationships, have a good community and work environment. All these are equal under the umbrella of this biometric. And so what's I love about it that it's simple. It lets us know how we're doing as a whole. The difficulty is in understanding, well, how do I impact this number? How do I get more heart rate variability? How can I get more my heart rate variability higher on a consistent basis? And this is where you have to dive into to the various areas of these components. There's things that we can't modify, non-modifiable factors, our genetics, our age, our sex. There's certain things that we can't control. Sometimes our environment, we are where we need to be able to be. But there's a lot of things that we can control, these modifiable factors. And so we have, when people come see me, we have these understanding of, okay, well, what can we modify? What can't we? We have an idea of our heart rate variability. And we start to be able to adjust and modify these factors, depending on the values, the goals, and the willingness for the people to do adapt and change into specific areas. And so HRV to me is a phenomenal biometric of our whole health well-being. The difficulty of trying to be able to improve it, and very similar with diabetes to a degree, is okay, well, what area do I need to address more than others for me? And it gives great feedback of to, yes, I'm making the right decisions, I'm doing the right things, or I'm not on the path to success.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that information. You know that diabetes is a big health concern, and heart rate variability can be a helpful tool for people with type 2 diabetes. My question is, how can heart rate variability be valuable tool to manage diabetes better or improve the health condition?
Yeah, so there's many different ways. And I'll start with the first one that seems to be a big amount of promising amount of research that's being done, is looking at the connection between heart rate variability and our blood glucose values. There's some indication that there can be some with other markers going on from wearable technology and health technology that we can start to be able to estimate our blood glucose values through non-invasive ways of heart rate variability being a primary biomarker of that equation. So big connection between those values, and you start to see that people that have unregulated or higher amounts of values of the blood sugar tend to have lower heart rate variabilities. You should look at the research, it's all the way through the process of that. So how can we, another value, so how can we use heart rate variability in regards to diabetics, that there's a big connection again around stress management. We know people that are under stress can have a significant increases of their blood sugar values and make it a significant amount of difficult to control. Stress comes from many different ways: biological stress, psychological stress, social stress, and our body doesn't differentiate. It's all as one. So we can use heart rate variability and its non-invasive nature to be able to kind of continuously monitor and check, making sure that we're on the right track and doing the right things. Sometimes, we see that the fact that we see reflective nature, that our nervous system through our measurement of heart rate variability is starting to become less stressed before our blood sugars do. That means that the interventions are going to make a good change over periods of time. And we can see that and vice versa. Sometimes when we start to be able to see blood sugar changes in people, that all of a sudden there's decreases in heart rate variability. Heart rate variability is a fantastic metric to understand our longevity from all cause mortality and morbidity. So there's a gigantic connection between the two. And usually when you see an impact on one over time, usually quite quickly, you see the impact on the other. So having a way to non-invasively measure this, you know, it's not sometimes, it's not fun wearing CGMs or taking your blood sugar prick every single morning. And you may not be able to get blood tested all the time, but there's inexpensive ways that you can measure your heart rate variability to give you a pretty good proxy of your status, of improvement, that you're becoming in more control of your blood sugars by monitoring your heart rate variability.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing these insights and very interesting information. I think that having an early detection for health issues is crucial. So can we use the heart rate variability function as an early warning sign for potential health problems?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where some people, you know, confuse it with diagnostic. It's not diagnostic tech. It doesn't say that there is a problem. But it can give a warning sign that there may be a problem. And to give you your point, one of my earlier patients that I saw on heart rate variability, this is back in 2013 when I was kind of first starting, we had a very, very low heart rate variability. It was an overweight individual, probably in his late 50s at the time, was trying to be able to be healthier, start to work out. And I saw a value that was lower than I would have liked and expected. So my first thing is, if people haven't been physically checked to make sure there's no physical ailments, you know, getting detailed analysis by a medical doctor with blood work and all that, go get that done. And it turned out type 2 diabetic. Had no idea up to that point, because it may be, I think it was like 5 years before he went to see a doctor, but he was getting to that, those ranges where it's like, hey, well, now we need metformin, interventions at this specific time to mitigate this response. So it allowed us to understand that there is some sort of changes to go down that road. And again, the differentiating factor is the fact that you would see those numbers in people that are depressed. You see those numbers in people that are in pain, that have cardiovascular disease, that don't engage in a lot of physical activity or very sedentary. So it's hard to, again, to diagnose various things, but we can absolutely indicate that, hey, maybe some intervention from a more of a physical health standpoint, making sure that there's nothing with the heart, the body, anything from that side that we're doing okay, as a general check. So that's where I like it as as you said, a warning sign to say, hey, let's start by investigating that we have, you know, everything is healthy and well from a very basic standpoint. We don't have any kind of pathologies or any disease states that need to be addressed, because that's obviously super important for us to be able to understand the realistic nature of how to best help this individual.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. So we can use it as like something helps us to at least start thinking or make us be aware of a health issue.
Yeah,
and you mentioned it's not a way to diagnose a health condition.
Yeah, so it's the other inverse as well is, you know, sometimes we have things too low and sometimes we have numbers that are too high. Just last year, I had an individual that was talking about his friend that said that he was wearing two different wearable devices, that it continuously monitored heart rate variability, and he thought he was a stud because it was higher than everybody else. And just to give reference points, I'll just throw out some generalized numbers that like a really good heart rate variability score is about 80 milliseconds. High level athletes, like endurance level athletes, are anywhere from about 100 to 120. The highest I've ever seen from a relatively healthy individual that is really focused on health is about 130. This individual's heart rate variability on two different wearable devices was 256. But I'm like, I've never even seen that in the literature. I've never even seen these things. I'm like, you need to be able to get a heart check done because there's something wrong with the rhythm. And funny enough, yeah, we had some arrhythmias that were happening in his heart rate that need to be monitored and checked and prescribed medication for. So again, warning sign doesn't necessarily mean that there's absolutely something wrong, but it can give indication you're too off the average for where you see your demographically you are, so you get an indication maybe I need some further and deeper investigation to make sure that everything's okay.
Brilliant. Thank you for confirming that as well. A person might be confused between heart rate variability and other health metrics such as VO2 max. So let's clarify the differences. So heart rate variability is discussed alongside VO2 max. How are these two metrics different, and what unique insights does each offer?
Yes. So I'll do the differences, and then I'll do the commonalities between the two. So I'll go through heart rate variability. So how is it measured and how is it done? Heart rate variability these days through wearable technologies is usually a nocturnal measure. It measures your heart rate through the night. So it usually these wearables take anywhere from about 60 to 90 samples at the nighttime, and they give you a specific number from that. And this is how much variability you have that indicates the balance of your autonomic nervous system, the amount of parasympathetic and sympathetic interaction that you currently have. What you want to be able to see is that at rest, you want a high amount of parasympathetic activity. So again, done nocturnally, measures our heart rhythm, and it's many different samples, and this is done on a continuous basis. VO2 max is the maximum amount of volume that people can consume per typically kilogram of body weight. This is done in a laboratory setting, and this is done with a mask over top to capture all the oxygen you're breathing in, as well as how much oxygen and carbon dioxide you're expelling as well. It is a exercise test where you're on some sort of cardiovascular equipment, typically, whether you're running or cycling or on a rower. Sometimes I've seen them done swimming. So usually something that you can gauge how much intensity the person is doing. It's progressively increased in regards to intensity, and you want to see how much oxygen is being consumed by this individual. So two different mechanisms as to how they're measured, what they're done, and there's a lot, obviously, difference of what you can do to improve upon it. VO2 max, what you typically want to be able to do is it looks at your aerobic capacity, so pretty much your physical capacity to deal with work. So how you improve this is through pushing yourself physically through exercise and physical activity. Heart rate variability looks at all that, including all the other metrics of health and well-being, including nutrition, including stress management and social capacity. And so there's more investigation needs to be done. It's not as easy to be able to prescribe the interventions from that because you have to take a much more holistic nature. The commonalities between the two is they both are predictors of all-cause mortality and morbidity, meaning the fact that a higher VO2 max and a higher heart rate variability, you will live longer, healthier lives. So that's where two are indicated. So how I go about using both of these type of metrics in what I do is we start with heart rate variability tracking. And then I start to be able to assess people's, from a general standpoint, more subjectively, what they're doing physically, nutritionally, what their recovery's like, what their stress management. So we have a hierarchy of needs based on this individual. Each are scored and we prioritize and each are standardized so we can have an idea where things are. If people's exercise physical capacity seems to be the limiting factor to all other type of metrics, this is where it'd be indicated to do a VO2 max test. So you want to look specifically at the physical capacity to do work. That's where that would be indicated for me. Then we would continuously use after that heart rate variability as the intervention efficacy of the plan is derived from the VO2 max information. So after I get the VO2 max, I say, hey, I see, it's a little bit lower than we'd like. Here's some various training regimens to be able to do that. We're going to do this for the next 6 weeks. We're going to implement that. How do I know that that intervention is working? We track the heart rate variability aspect of it all to see, hey, we'll see some dips, obviously, as we introduce a stressor, but we want to see that HRV increase over time. When we start to see a plateauing effect of heart rate variability or a regression, this is indication that we need to do a VO2 max test again.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you for sharing this very interesting information, and thank you for the insights about this about the comparison between VO2 max and heart rate variability. So let's talk about methods and technique when it comes to heart rate variability. What are some effective HRV training methods and techniques that people can implement to enhance their heart rate variability?
Yeah, there's two buckets when you want to look at it at this way. And again, it comes down to stress, you know, its connection with our stress with our health and well-being. And so I see two ways HRV can be useful in regards to stress resilience, which is one way to look at things, versus stress management. Stress resilience is more proactive. It's looking at our capacity to increase our stress tolerance, more things that we can add into, you know, from our behaviors, so we can take on more things and be physically okay, that we don't need as much recovery in a general sense. Then there's the stress management, dealing with things right now, such as the stress of doing a podcast or public speaking or having a deadline that's coming up for work, more managing the day-to-day stressors of life. And HRV is used in both of those ways. Again, the primary way that people use heart rate variability is through the nocturnal, the capture during the night. And this is more of an indication of stress resilience. A higher heart rate variability through the night means the fact that we can get into parasympathetic, and the next day we're able to be able to take on more stressors physiologically. Stress management comes to the point of people use heart rate variability in the moment, where they start to be able to, you know, for instance, a lot of psychologists or clinical counselors will actually use either an ear clip or some sort of sensor, finger sensor, to look at people's heart rate variability in the moment. As they go through the session, they start talking about their problems, start talking about what they want to be able to talk about, their past traumas, their, you know, relationships at work or relationships at home. And they keep an eye on the heart rate variability. Are people shifting into a stressed state? They start to be become aware, say, what feelings are you feeling of now? Are you getting anxious? Are you getting irritable? You start moving a lot more. So they become aware when their body shifts into a stress state, which is called our interoception. And then they start to be able to mitigate that and start to say, hey, let's stop. Let's close your eyes. Picture yourself, you know, somewhere beautiful, mental imagery. You can do breathing techniques. You can do various forms of meditation to regulate, making sure that, yes, stress is good, but we want to be able to make sure that we come back down in an appropriate amount of time, that we don't ruminate. We don't magnify the problems. We don't, you know, continuously think about it. So those are two different ways and two different areas to look at impacting our heart rate variability, is the stress resilience side, which is our overall behaviors of our, what's our physical activity like? What's our nutrition like? What's our sleep habits like? You know, what is our connection with people? These kind of big behaviors. And then stress management comes to the point is, through the day, do I have techniques to make sure that if there is a problem, that I deal with it appropriately? As stress comes in acutely, as not as much physical, but more emotional stress, can I make sure that I, you know, mitigate the response so it has as small amount of impact to my physiology as possible?
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing these great insights. We know that long-term health and longevity are very important, and you have already mentioned longevity, and you just mentioned about using heart rate variability as a method to manage stress. So my next question is, how does heart rate variability play a role in long-term health and longevity, and why should people consider it in their health journey?
Yes. So we know through, so the big connection is the fact that we know through time, and look at the longevity studies, heart rate variability decreases over time. Same thing with VO2 max, any kind of markers longevity, you start to see that's the trend. So it becomes an understanding that there's an association between longevity and heart rate variability. We also see people that are healthier at the end of life, you know, have higher heart rate variability as well, just like they have high VO2 maxes. And so we start to be able to see the connection between those things and how we can use it to improve our longevity is, you know, we hear there's so many things out there that can improve our health. So many things, right? I remember, I won't name the doctor, but I was at a keynote speech with the doctor and I was going through all the things that can improve our health and longevity. And by the time he got to number 150 something, like it was just so many things in a day. I'm like I don't know how, you know, we don't have all this time in the day to only prioritize this. And this is the only thing that we do. We aren't Brian Johnson of the Blueprint. I don't know if you've seen that individual. He's the most quantified man and on the face of the earth, that he's literally quantifying everything and showing all that. But we don't have time to only focus purely on trying to be as healthy and live long as possible. No one had, you know, very small amount of population has to do that. So what are the big things and what is going to impact me the most? You know, for instance, with diet, you know, it's so nuanced and I, you know, there's nothing more dogmatic in health and well-being than nutrition. And it is, as you know, with, I'm sure, monitoring blood sugars, you know that there's certain foods that impact you that may not, you know, that research shows that you should be eating. So it's this thing of finding the individuality of what is best for you. My own story with this is, you know, I mean, how many people now are doing cold exposure and cold water immersion? Like it's all the rage that it's, you know, it's great for stress management. It's this and that. It's makes your skin glow. I don't know. There's so many things that that says that it does. I did a 6-week protocol, very conservative. And I got significantly worse. I was progressively getting worse, not only on my objective biometrics, but subjectively. Not only did I absolutely hate doing it, and despised it personally, you know, and I do things that I don't like, running, for instance, hate running. But through my later on when I'm done, subjectively and objectively, things are phenomenal. While I was doing this cold water immersion for 6 weeks, my sleep kept getting worse subjectively. My heart rate variability was going down. My wife said I was more irritable. So there's a lot of many things that were indicating like this isn't the right for me. Whether it's the right protocol or the right time, whatever necessarily it was, it wasn't for me. And so I stopped doing it. And obviously things went back to relative normal. And I respond significantly better to sauna and infrared sauna type of work. So that's what I primarily do. And is that going to stop me from going back to a different time? No, but I just know that there shouldn't be a me continuing down this road that it doesn't provide me benefit, right? You look at the research, it says, hey, improves growth hormone by, you know, 200%. But that's the average. That's not everybody. It's not everybody was exactly 200% and that was that, right? We have this range of fluctuation up and down and things like that. And I want to know for that individual that's in front of me, that when I tell them to do something, right, prescribe something, that it's right for them at the right time, with the right duration, right intensity. And this is the feedback that heart rate variability gives me.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. I know you have already given us some practical tips and insights. Do you have some more tips to share before we move to the next part?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things we can improve heart rate variability, but it takes a lot of investigation into that, as we know, especially if we're trying to managing a difficult condition like type 2 diabetes. It's a lot of, you know, trial and error with a lot of different aspects. And I think heart rate variability is an added biometric to look at holistically, that, you know, you're doing everything you possibly can to manage.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that, as well. In case someone may be interested in working with a heart rate variability coach, what should they know first before they start? And are there any requirements and how they can get started?
Yeah, it depends on how you want to be able to commit to this. There's an option where if you have a heart rate strap, there's a free apps out there. You can measure it. Even I think it's, you know, $10 for an app called HRV for Training that just uses the camera on your phone. And you can do these morning measurements. You can start with that to see where you're at comparatively. And then you can go all the way up to the, you know, the $1,000 garments that are out there to kind of get, you know, into everything. But the number one step to say to everybody is you need to be able to start measuring and testing various things first. You know, if you just start measuring heart rate variability and you realize that you're in the lower side of things, don't just try to seek help right away. Try to be able to see, hey, what happens if I optimize my sleep, have a great sleep environment? What happens if I concentrate on my diet for the next, you know, 2 weeks? What happens if I change my exercise routine, or if I do meditation, or if I start being more social, start connecting with people? Like, start to experiment a little bit and start to understand okay, when I do this type of intervention, what does this do for me? How does this actually work? Usually, you know, I get people that they've already gone down that road, but a couple times I've had people where they just started. You know, it's been 3 days since they've been measuring, and I go, not yet. I mean, the work that we're going to do is pretty, you know, deep down the rabbit hole of working on these things. But, you know, I give them a recommendation of start with these various things based on what they tell me and start experimenting with that. And then when you're ready and you're just unsure of where to go, I'd be more than happy to be able to help you. And what's great is being in this community for the last 10 years in regards to health and well-being, kind of virtual coaching. If people are interested in improving, say, heart rate variability in particular, or anything that comes from their wearable technology, I've surrounded myself with a great network of people that, if you're focused on high performance purely, I got those people to be able to do with that if that's your sole purpose. I have people that, if you really want to work on your coherence of your nervous system and various techniques that can do that, I can introduce that, but I have people that's what they do and be able to point them into the right direction. And so what I typically give direction for people, I kind of like triage them into specific areas. And when people want a really holistic view and understanding, and I try to bring a lot of awareness around health and how that can impact heart rate variability. So that's where I fit in with the majority of the people that I see. And I, you know, I'd say for every person that I take on as a client, probably one person that I send out to somebody else because it's just not the right fit.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. So are there any apps or devices that we should use?
Yeah, so in regards to apps, so I'll kind of go from the most accessible if you have no type of equipment to obviously the high level aspect of, and where do you want to be able to go from there? So the one app is HRV for Training. It's run by a gentleman named Marco Altini. Again, you don't need any equipment other than a smartphone. And it takes the camera and the light, and you just put your finger on it, and you can get a measurement. Like, I think it's like $10 to be able to get start for a lifetime access to this information. And all you do is you wake up, you take this measurement on your finger, and then it saves it, and you can track that over periods of time. You can do various techniques like breathing through it all, which is phenomenal. If you already have a Bluetooth-enabled heart rate strap, there's a free app called Elite HRV. I know Jason Moore, the founder, very, very well. You download that app, it pairs with your heart rate strap, and you can do it that way as well through those devices. In regards to something that's a little more continuous, Fitbit's already coming out with wearables that measure heart rate variability. Granted, the accuracy is not the best, but it gets you to start to have a, you know, dive deep a little bit into that specific biometric and how it can impact you. So Fitbit's got, I think it's $100 for you know, their basic Fitbit that measures heart rate variability. And I'm sure their software and firmware are going to improve and be able to improve in accuracy in those side of things. What I'd suggest people do, or people really want to take it seriously, is you start looking at wearables. Different than smartwatches. Smartwatches have an interface and everything. Wearables are more to the point, like the Oura Ring, which is a ring-based wearable, or the Whoop, which is a wrist-based wearable. Things that don't have interfaces. And the reason why is the data quality is significantly improved when the battery doesn't have to be drained by something you're interacting with that continuously takes on information. So wearables that don't have a lot of any kind of features to it, it's literally just the device that measures, seems to be the best gold standard way of measuring that. To give you an idea of where heart rate, and that it pairs with your phone, all the data comes through that, which is phenomenal. And then the higher end of the smartwatches is not Apple Watch, which a lot of people always ask me, what about an Apple Watch? I say no, and the reason why is because one, it has so many features and functions that the sensor quality isn't there yet. It will be, but it's not there yet. Even to the point when they capture their HRV metrics through the night, you typically only get like 3-4 data points through the night. And we know through sleep cycles, heart rate speeds up, slows down, and different things. If you only capture in certain points of your sleep cycle, which already it's very difficult to understand your sleep stages with wearables, so who knows if it's even, you know, where it's picking up the data, you're not getting a lot of sample size. So these wearables, you know, like the Oura Ring or the Whoop Band, they take anywhere from like 60 to 90 samples in a nighttime to give you a wide range of information. The smartwatch that I would suggest if you want something with a little more functionality, but you know, also want to kind of get as good quality data as you possibly can, a Garmin is a very good wearable in that standpoint. They have a lot of functionalities, a lot of integrations, and a lot of information when it comes to the heart rate variability side of things. And so they're upping their game quite a bit. They're not as functional as an Apple Watch, obviously, but they still have a lot of functionality. But it's not as much as the displays that Apple has or Samsung or any of those type of different type of smartwatches. You can still do a lot of things, but you're not, you know, you're having better quality data than an Apple Watch.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. Very interesting. I think this episode will give people an overview about heart rate variability, so they know what is it all about, how to get started, and what tools or devices they can use. I have got another question before we finish this episode. What inspiring message or advice would you like to leave with our viewers and listeners, specifically those struggling with type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, this is one of my biggest messages that I tell people is when people get a diagnosis, whatever it is, whether it's diabetes, whether it's fibromyalgia, whether it's cancer, their agency over their health, they feel that the health is out of their control. They don't feel they have agency anymore over what they can do. They're at the mercy of kind of the condition. They have this label, and they need to be able to see all these medical professionals in order to be able to help. Their hope seems to be dwindled and diminished. But what we can do over health and well-being, a vast majority of it is within our control. 50% of our health outcomes are driven by our behaviors, more than anything else combined. So yes, we have this condition that people are under, but you have to realize there's so much you can do to mitigate symptoms. And as we know now with type 2 diabetes, get, you know, this remission reversal to get into, you know, significant amount of control over what people, over their blood sugar values and their internal physiology. There's so much we can do in regards to that. So I really want people to feel empowered that the fact that there's so many avenues to health and well-being, some you may not be addressing, that can have a drastic impact into your health and well-being. And the connection between diabetes and heart conditions is obviously very, very strong. So having that kind of metric and association with, you know, glucose monitoring is going to be super empowering for people, that we can show that we have the, through our behaviors, we're protecting our heart. Yes, we have diabetes, but we're doing everything from our heart perspective, making sure that we don't develop any type of atherosclerosis or arteriosclerosis when it comes to cardiovascular disease. And we can mitigate a lot of those things if we can alter our behaviors. And I think the feedback through heart rate variability allows people to understand which specific behaviors are important for them and making sure that they're making the right choices.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing your inspiring message. How can people find you if they want to get in touch, learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah, so I just recently launched a personal website, gregelliott.ca. I'm going to be hosting a lot of free ebooks and videos onto there of all the podcasts I've been on, obviously including this one, to get people the resources to kind of help empower that and use HRV as a kind of a proxy to improve health and well-being. Head to there. You can also, any questions, you can book a little call with me to see how I can help you around any questions that you may have or the right direction to be able to go. But everything is going to be up on that. I'll be working on that through the rest of the year into the new year, and there'll be a lot of resources for people to have for free.
Brilliant. And I will leave the or the contact information in the show notes of this episode as well. Thank you for sharing your contact information. First and foremost, I would like to express my sincere gratitude for our amazing guest, Greg, for generously sharing his expertise, insights, and time with us today. Your contribution has truly elevated this episode, and I deeply appreciate your the information you have provided. I want also to thank every one of you, our dedicated viewers and listeners, for being a part of this episode. If you are seeking additional support and guidance on your health journey, I encourage you to book a discovery call with me at wellnessimpact.org. During this call, we can discuss your needs and explore how I can provide personalized assistance while addressing any questions you may have. If you found today's episode insightful and valuable, I invite you to join our community of people committed to thriving with diabetes. To stay up to date for upcoming episodes, inspiring or empowering discussions, practical tips, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For those who prefer other platforms such as Spotify, you can follow the Thriving with Diabetes podcast. Once again, thank you, Greg, for being our guest. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in this insightful journey. Until next time, take care of your health and keep thriving.